What it do, sports fans? No, I am not Wall. I am Mike Story back here again, the college football rundown. This is going to be a challenge for me. This is my first time in the big chair here, filling in for Mr. Wall. He's been very admirable. He had to take some time off this week, but I am not alone. You know him joining. He's a regular by this point. You've tailed his winners, and you might have cursed a few of his bad beats along the way. Josh Harlow. How are we feeling heading into week 14, Josh?
I'm excited to be back, Mikey. Ready to provide the listeners with another winner. We went 3-0 last week, man. That was fun. We all made some money, had a bit of spending money in our pockets after last Saturday's action. So I'm excited to be back and yeah, looking forward to talking some ball.
I was flipping between the state game and the BYU game. They were close until the end there, but we did come through. But we've got another guest with us today. We've got a first timer on the rundown. I'm excited about this one. Jeremy Harlow, Josh's brother, longtime college football fan, longtime college football degenerate, sharp eye on the totals. I think we'll hear about that later tonight. Covers the Big 12 like a beat writer. First time on the show. Jeremy, what's your vibe heading into week 14?
I mean, it's exciting. Last week, a bunch of teams had the patsies, kind of the off week. So it's nice to get back to some competitive games this week.
Rivalry week, boys.
Let's
It is
go.
rivalry week. Rival, I can never say that. I cannot put those two words together. I don't know what it is. It's rivalry week indeed. So,
There you go. It
yes,
is.
thank you. Thank you. Here's how we're going to roll today. We're going to start with a quick weekly recap, just the big picture stuff from around the country. Then we'll drill into week 13 highlights, specific games. We'll shift our eyes to a featured matchups, and after that, we'll fly through the rest of the board with some quick hitters. I know you guys have some opinions on that, and depending on how the show is flowing, we may or may not get into story time. I know we missed it last week. As always, we'll close it down with a rundown pick'em. As Josh said, we did go 3-0 last week. We're very excited about that, and we hope to keep the good times rolling. So let's start with a quick reset of where things stand after week 13, because honestly, this past weekend was mostly stabilized in the national picture. At the top, no real chaos. Ohio State stays perfect. Texas A&M rolls to 11-0. Oregon cruising to 10-1, and Notre Dame and Alabama both move to 9-2 without much drama. Guys, what's your take on the standings after week 13?
Yeah, I'll go first, Jeremy, if you don't mind.
Yep.
Like you said, Mike, there are really no major shakeups in the rankings. I do want to talk a little bit about Oklahoma and how they fit into the picture. I think I have some opinions, Mike. I know you have opinions on Mateer, and I want to get into those a little bit more because I don't think they did anything to quell some of your concerns from last week, from the time that we were on the pod last week. So like you said, no major rake shakeups in the rankings, but a lot of it was just based off of who was on the schedule. Most of the heavy hitters were playing cupcakes, and that's just how the schedule rolled out. So really excited to get into rivalry week this week and see some games that really matter.
Well, when you got Mercer and Eastern Illinois on the SEC schedule, those are not games that are exactly in high demand. Jeremy, what do you think? Is there anything standing out to you in the top 12 here that you think any teams that shouldn't be there? Miami sneaking in at 9-2 into the top 12.
Miami was ranked really high in the preseason, and I feel like sometimes, the committee, like they kind of err on the side of keeping those teams ranked high that were ranked high early in the season. I think that's what happened with Miami. And Miami had a couple rough games, but I actually feel like they've been playing better recently. Beck obviously had a huge game. I mean, that guy's been in college football, it seems like forever, It reminds me of Tommy Boy. Lots of people go to college for 8 years, but most of them are doctors and lawyers. So I think the top 12 is right about where it should be.
Well, I hate to bring up the obvious here, but you got number 13 in the selection committee, Utah, just outside looking in. I think we're going to touch on that game maybe a little later on, but I just wanted to bring it up that Jeremy is a big Utah fan. He's got his daughter going there, and she's doing extraordinarily well, from what I understand. But you've got to be excited that they are on the precipice of getting into the playoffs.
I am, but I tell you, it's going to be a hard road from them. I mean, with BYU and Texas Tech ranked ahead of them, it's going to be tough to win the conference. And with these automatic bids, even if they make it up to 12, it's going to be pretty hard for them to get in. So.
Well, they are on the outside looking in right now, but we've got a massive rivalry week ahead. As Josh said, we've got Ohio State and Michigan. We've got Texas A&M and Texas, the Iron Bowl. We've got the Egg Bowl. I think we need a better name for that one. We got Oregon and Washington. And from a market standpoint, things are moving around. Key injuries, defensive injuries, Michigan's defensive injuries, Texas is missing defenders. Let's touch up base on last week first. So, USC, Oregon, it was a big matchup, and Oregon came out on top. They handled business 42 to 27. Josh, what did you see in this game?
Yeah, it was a fantastic environment, first and foremost. They had College Game Day there. Pat McAfee had a shirt off, as usual. Outson Stadium was electric, and it was senior day to boot. And Oregon showed up and showed out, man. They essentially ended USC's college football playoff hopes with a statement win against the top 16 team. Dante Moore threw for 260 and two touchdowns. And Oregon was able to do what so many other teams against USC have done, right? They found explosive plays down the field against USC's porous defense. Mekhi Lemon did show up, man. Like he played really well. He was still a monster. He had two TD receptions,
And a touchdown
and
pass.
he threw for a touchdown pass.
Yeah, that was something else.
Yeah, but it wasn't quite enough to keep up with the Ducks. Really entertaining game all around. It's still so weird for me to have both of these teams in the Big Ten. Like
Oh,
it's so
I will
strange for
never get
me.
used to it.
I'll never ever get used to it, but entertaining brand of football was really really excited about this game, and I feel like it lived up to the hype. But Oregon showed up when it mattered most, man. They credit to them. I think on the pod last week, I was leaning USC to cover on this, but was definitely wrong on that one. Oregon came to play.
Well, offensively, they certainly controlled the pace. They won on early downs. They created chunk plays. Mekhi Lemon and Jacoby Lane. We've talked about those guys in the past. Jeremy, anything to add on this? I will say real quick, though, you're talking about these teams in the Big Ten. How about Washington being in the Big Ten, a Big Ten Midwest team, quote unquote, and they start at
Yeah.
9:30 last week?
Crazy, crazy. Yeah, I tell you what stood out to me at that game, the USC Oregon game, USC actually had a couple costly penalties. This game really could have been a lot closer than it was. They had a couple key penalties. There was one, I think the Oregon had a fourth down, or no, it was a field goal attempt. There was a penalty on USC, which gave Oregon the first down, and they ended up scoring a touchdown. There was a couple other penalties later in the game that kept drives alive for Oregon. That was kind of unfortunate. USC is they've got a lot of talent, but the Oregon Ducks overall, they're just a balanced, complete team, and they proved it last weekend.
Well, they're going to make some noise in the playoffs for sure. They set the tone out west. But let's move on to another Week 13 highlight. Let's go to Austin next. Jeremy, this is now your neck of the woods, believe me, believe
Yes.
it or not. Number 17, Texas, taking on Arkansas. This one turned into a track meet. Texas wins it 52 to 37. And the story here was the Longhorns offense peaking at the right time. They certainly seem to be coming into their own after what would some describe as a disastrous offensive start. I'm going to start with you, Jeremy, since this is your neck of the woods. When you see Texas put up 50 points but still leaking big plays, again, Arkansas put up 37, how do you evaluate them heading into a rivalry game with Texas A&M this week?
Well, I'll tell you a couple things, Mike. Texas's defense has been great all year, but they're dealing with a few injuries, and they're not going to be able to carry Texas like they were earlier in the season. And Arch Manning, he is so frustrating. He's what I like to call a 4A player. He's great. He's great against lesser teams, which, let's face it, Arkansas is a lesser team. He puts up huge numbers and shows out, but it's the big games, other than Oklahoma. He did have a great game against Oklahoma, but other than that, like, he puts up these huge numbers against these inferior teams, but when it comes to the good teams, he doesn't play very well. So he put up big numbers against Arkansas, but to me, that doesn't really excite me. That doesn't really show me anything. Like, he needs to do it in a big game.
Well, he's going to have an opportunity
Yeah, he will have an opportunity. Yeah.
against A&M coming up.
Well, Josh, let me ask you, is this Texas's identity now? Elite offense, shaky defense, or is this just issues specifically related to the injuries that they've seen on defense?
Well, I think it has to be their identity now, right? Because, as you mentioned, They're missing guys on defense. And sometimes good teams have to find a way to adapt to who they have, right? The best ability in football is availability. And if you are missing your key starters on defense, then you got to be able to, as an offense, step it up, right? One side of the ball has to pick up the other side of the ball. So that's kind of what I've seen from Texas and what I saw last week. Arch Manning was the difference in this game. He passed for a career high 4 touchdowns. He ran one. He also caught
Caught one. Yep,
a
yep.
touchdown pass. Really weird. Yeah, weird,
I think
wonky
he was
stat.
responsible for 6 touchdowns in that game.
So he just stuffed the stat sheet against a vulnerable Arkansas defense. I mean, Arkansas is looking for answers, right? Nobody is going to argue that they're a good team. They've lost 9 in a row and a completely lost season. It'll be interesting to see what they want to do at head coach. We alluded to the injuries, right, on defense. The Longhorns were missing starting linebacker Anthony Hill Jr. with a hand injury. I know Sark said that he's hopeful that Hill's going to return against Texas A&M, and they're going to need him, right? Jeremy had mentioned that Texas's defense had looked solid for most of the year, and that's true. But the last 3 games, they've surrendered at least 30 points. So, and some of that has to do with the personnel that they're missing. But I'm fascinated about next week's or excuse me, this week's matchup. It should be a good game. That's one that I'm excited to dig into a little bit later on.
Well, we'll see if the defense can right the ship in time for the playoffs. Let's move on to South Bend, though. We don't have to spend too much time on this one. Everyone knows the score. Notre Dame welcome Syracuse. They end up absolutely dominating them, 70-7. Josh, let me start with you. How much do we read into this level of dominance? Is Notre Dame an ascending offense, or was this just a complete mismatch where the final score tells us more about Syracuse than it does Notre Dame?
Yeah, I would go with the latter there, Mike. It's not that I don't like Notre Dame. I just don't think you can draw a ton from this game. Notre Dame led the game 21-0 before they possessed the ball on offense.
That's
That's how
insane.
out of hand this game was. I will say Jeremiah Love continues to show why he's the most dynamic player in all of college football, in my humble opinion.
What, why is he not getting more Heisman buzz?
I don't know.
He's one of the best players in the country.
Yeah.
If I was voting right now, I'd vote for him for the Heisman.
Yeah, it would be hard to argue against that. I do feel like Notre Dame will be a team that not a lot of other teams want to play in the college football playoffs. But again, as we talked last week, Mike, I still have these reservations about the quarterback. I still don't know if I can trust CJ Carr in the biggest moments of the biggest games, and that's what they're going to be playing from here on out. So we're about to find out. I will very gladly come on this pod in a couple of weeks and admit that I was completely wrong about CJ Carr if he proves me wrong, but I still have some reservations on the quarterback end.
Well, Jeremy, let me kick this to you. CJ Carr, 5 for 9 for 49 yards, one touchdown. He took a sack in this game for negative 10 yards. Is this prescriptive, or was this just a matter of the defense? And if it is the defense, what does that mean? Is this a signal for the college football playoffs?
You can't even look at his numbers for that game. I mean, like Josh said, they were up. Notre Dame was up 21-0 before their offense set foot on the field. So he didn't need to throw the ball.
I don't know if I've ever seen. I feel like we've watched a lot of football over the
That's
years.
insane.
I don't
I've
know if
never
I've
seen anything
ever
like
seen
that.
that in any level of football that I've
But I'll
watched.
tell you what, Mike, going forward, it's cliche, right? Like if you have a team with a good run offense and a team with a solid defense, the quarterback just has to be a game
Game
manager,
manager, yeah.
right? It's the old cliche, but that's really all Carr has to do. He just has to not make mistakes and let his run game, let them eat the clock up. Rely on their defense, and I think Notre Dame could actually be pretty dangerous come playoff time.
Well, let's move on to the Big Ten. And I do not want to call this young man a game manager, but Jeremy, you talk about a team that has a good run offense and a good defense, although they are dealing with several injuries now. Bryce Underwood from Michigan, they go to Maryland. Bryce Underwood, 16 for 23, 215, two touchdowns. I think the story here, the run game, not missing a beat. Jordan Marshall, the backup to the backup, was injured. So they're at their fourth string running back that right now. Bryson Cudzall, 20 for 100, 3 touchdowns on the ground. But let me start with you, Jeremy. Did this look like Michigan protecting the playbook here? Because this was a pretty vanilla game all around. They kept it on the ground quite a bit. But are there actual red flags to the defense as well?
Yeah, no, and I mean, obviously Michigan won big in this game, but you can't tell me they weren't looking ahead, Right. I mean, I think they're already focused on Ohio State. That's their Super Bowl every season. So I don't think you can look at anything that happened in this Maryland game and look into it too much because they were definitely looking ahead. Yeah,
And
but
Josh, sorry to interrupt you there, but I just want to get your perspective from a betting standpoint. Is this a positive sign for Michigan, or the fact that, again, they put up 45 points, but there was really not much creativity to the offense here? Is that a sign going forward? Do you think they're holding something back for Ohio State?
that's a great question. If I knew the answer to that question, Mike, I'd probably not be sitting here on this pod with you. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Again, it's going to be an intriguing game, the game, right, against Ohio State. So we'll see what happens. This game for me was interesting because Maryland actually outgained Michigan through the air. 276 yards to 215, but as you guys both said, the Wolverines just dominated on the ground. They ran for a combined 228 yards compared to Maryland's 71. So the game was won in the trenches. I actually thought there was a chance that Michigan might pull the, like, looking ahead so much that they really, really struggle. And maybe it's that's more looking at Maryland and the quality of opponent that they face, but Maryland's kept it close with some teams in the Big Ten this year. I actually thought that Michigan did a really good job of not of really not looking too much ahead. They did what they had to do, and it wasn't spectacular, but it didn't need to be.
Well, I will agree with you on the passing side of things. They have a stable of wide receivers there at Maryland, and they tend to rotate through quite a bit. Even with the injuries they've had, they've always been productive. Let's move on. We'll talk about Miami and Virginia Tech real quick. If you guys have anything specific, Miami takes this one 34-17 in a solid, well-rounded win. I want to close out the highlights, though, with Missouri and Oklahoma. Anything on Miami and Virginia Tech real quick?
Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot to Miami, Virginia Tech. I did not watch this game personally, so I didn't have a whole ton on this one. I don't know, Jeremy, if you had anything specific that you wanted to note on Miami and
No, not really. I mean, again, Carson Beck had a great game, threw for I think like 390 yards or something like that. So he looked good. You know, he had a couple shaky games earlier in the season.
his turnovers with him. He turns the ball over in critical situations.
Critical spots. Yeah. But you know, Beck, he's had lots of big game experience. He's had lots of playoff experience from his time in Georgia. So again, I think come
Back in
playoff time.
1992 when he
Yeah,
started
seriously. I think we
his
might have
first
gone to college
college
together. Like, but
game.
yeah, but I again, I think Miami will be dangerous. I'm so excited for the playoffs, guys. I
Yeah.
mean, this expanded playoff format has been long overdue, and you've got so many teams, so many dangerous teams in the top 12 that could really make a run, and I think Miami's one of those teams.
They just got to be careful. Those turnovers could become a problem in December if Miami lets those kind of don't clean that up. But let's talk about Missouri and Oklahoma. Josh, I know you have thoughts about this one. This is the opposite of a shootout in Norman. Oklahoma grinds out a win 17-6. They entire lean on their defense entirely. It was good to see Metoyer running the ball again. It had been several games since he had even cracked, I'll call it 20, 25 yards rushing. He had 18 for 60 on the ground. I mean, that's an ugly win, but a win is a win, and it brings you into the playoff conversation right up there. Josh, with this kind of defense, grinded out wins, how do you rate Oklahoma going into LSU and then going into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're shaky. I was talking to Jeremy about this before we jumped on. In my opinion, and I think we might differ here, but I don't know if I don't know if I can trust Oklahoma against a really explosive offense. I'm not 100% sure. They've done what they needed to do, right? They were coming off road wins against Tennessee. And Alabama, they claim their third straight victory over a ranked opponent. So it was impressive that they were able to get the job done. And they're likely, you alluded to it, Mike, they're probably gonna make the playoff field with a win at home against LSU. So I don't know. With the quality of teams in the field, if I'm looking at one or two teams that to me feels like they might not belong, Oklahoma's one of them.
And Jeremy, do you see this defense as a strength Or do you worry that the offense didn't show enough like Josh does?
No, I mean the offense did enough to win. You guys, Missouri's not a cupcake. They're a decent team. Yep. I thought the defense played great. And you know, Mike, I know you're not a big Mateer fan, but you know, he was injured in the beginning of the season, and I feel like it could be one of those things where, you know, sometimes a player is healthy enough to come back, but sometimes it takes a few weeks for them to really get back in the groove. And I feel like maybe Mateer is finally starting to do that.
You know, I will agree with you there, Jeremy. He had that wrist injury and he was out for, I think it was only two, maybe three games, which is extremely surprising. The Michael Hawkins, the backup, he played admirably instead. I'm wondering if he, one of those things where you get an injury and you're just worried about you're scared to get hit again, or you're worried that you're going to
Exactly.
re-injure it. And maybe he's finally coming into his own. Like I said, good to see him running. I just want to touch on, talk on, or mention the score real quickly. Vanderbilt blows out Kentucky 45 to 17. Arizona State beats Colorado 42 to 17. But let's move on to the featured matchups. And we've got to start in the Big Ten, maybe the biggest game on the slate, Ohio State at Michigan. Jeremy, I'm going to start with you with this one. Does this low total, this is only 44 and a half, even with how explosive Ohio State's offense can be with Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith. Now, Carnell Tate has missed a couple of games. Was this push you towards Michigan and the underdog, or does Ohio State still have the right side on this one? The spread is minus 10. It has creeped up from 9.5.
Yeah, and you know, I know that is a low total, but again, I mean, there is no rivalry bigger than these two. And so I think with rivalry games, you tend to see lower scoring games, which I think this will be. But I mean, guys, I just think Ohio State, like, forget about Michigan. Ohio State's the most talented team in college football, and I don't even really think it's that close. And I'm talking top to bottom, offense, defense. I think Ryan Day is a great coach. Yeah, I think OU wins and covers, but I do think it'll be a lower scoring game.
And Josh, what is your read here? Do you think Michigan's defensive health justifies that minus 10-point spread?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Jeremy said it, and I'm going to agree with him. Ohio State has been the most dominant team in all of college football all year. I hate it, just because I'm not a huge fan of Ohio State. And I'm really rooting for the Hoosiers as well. So the fan in me doesn't love how dominant Ohio State has been, but you know, Michigan has showed up in these games year after year. Sherrone Moore, the head coach, has won one of these matchups before. I think
His first one, his first,
when
yeah.
Harbaugh was suspended, maybe.
Yeah.
So you know, it's not like he hasn't gotten a taste of this rivalry and what this means to both schools before. So he's got some history there. I know Michigan's secondary is really banged up, so look for Julian Sand to exploit that mismatch. I'm likely staying away from this one, but if forced, I'd probably take OSU here.
Well, I think it was smart for them to hold out both Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate until they're fully healthy here. Julian Sand, though, he's been extraordinarily steady at quarterback. In fact, he's now third in the Heisman race at plus 450. Fernando Mendoza, minus 105. Your boy there, he's right up there. And then Jeremy, we mentioned him earlier. You want to guess who number three is in the Heisman race right now? It's Jeremiah Love,
There you
plus
go. There
350.
we go, baby.
There we go. Let's move on to Texas A&M versus Texas. This one is going to be very, very exciting. A&M laying 2.5. Total is much higher, 51.5. This is a showdown with playoff implications. The first one in Texas, which is kind of wild to say out loud. Betting wise, you're getting a contrast of Texas plus over sounds good, or A&M plus under, and of course the usual rivalry conversation. Jeremy or Josh, let's start with you. What jumps out more, Texas's defensive issues here or the A&M's running back injuries? Because again, I mean, we had Le'Veon Moss go down, and then Ruben Owens got hurt 2 games ago, and then he suited up, but he didn't play. EJ Smith took over a game ago, and then he didn't even dress this past game, and they just keep rotating through backs here. Josh, what's your take on all this?
I like Texas A&M in this game. I really do. I know that Texas's offense could be peaking at just the right time. And if Texas wins, I mean, would I don't know, at three wins, or excuse me, at three losses, does that garner any sort of playoff potential for them? I'm not really sure. I know
If
that,
they have a chance, they need to win.
yeah, I mean
If
they
they even have a chance.
yeah, and this would obviously be a huge win for them, but as Jeremy mentioned before, Arch Manning against really quality opponents has struggled. He struggled with turnovers. He struggled with his completion percentage. He struggled to place the ball where it needs to be against really, really stiff competition. And I don't think that changes. I really don't. So again, I don't know if I'll lay cash for this one, but I do feel like Texas A&M probably covers here.
Well, they are a road dog, which can be good spots. Jeremy, in a rivalry game like this, are you leaning spread or money line?
Honestly, I like the spread here. This game is really fascinating for me. Marcel Reed, this guy doesn't get talked about enough. I like to call him Skinny Vic. The kid has an absolute cannon, and he can run. He's got moves when he runs. So I look for him to have a big game. As Josh said, I don't trust Archie Manning in big games. You combine that with the fact that as we talked about before, Texas D has some injuries that makes them vulnerable, which I think that means A&M's going to put up a lot of points. And the other thing you got to look at in this game is I feel like even though Texas A&M is ranked 3 in the country, I think they go into this game with a bit of an underdog mentality, only because in the state of Texas, the Longhorns are king. So no matter what the rankings are, A&M's going to feel like an underdog going against Texas, and I think that's really going to help them. And I think I like them to cover.
Mikey, we're getting boots on the ground reporting from Jeremy Harlow. I freaking love it, man. That's
We're
awesome.
man in Texas, baby.
I love it. That's
Well,
so
I think Johnny Manziel might disagree with you a little bit there
good.
on the king of Texas, Jeremy. But if anybody knows, you know. Let's keep this moving, guys. I love it. I'm loving this. Let's move on to another rivalry. Oregon at Washington. This one, Ducks -6.5, a total of 51.5. I know several people in the Rundown audience who are extremely excited about this one. Handicap wise, big question, is that 6.5 too short? Just right? A little rich? I'll give you my opinion first. I think if Denzel Boston and Jonah Coleman are fully participating, if they play in this game 100%, then I think Washington covers this one. But Josh, how do you feel about this number? Is Oregon -6.5 too cheap considering how they've been playing? Am I wrong?
I actually think I'm going to go the other way in this one, Mike. No offense. Oregon looks very well balanced. They did not have problems scoring against USC. I know you could say, well, nobody has a whole lot of problems scoring against USC, but Oregon took care of business in a very big game, in a big spot for them. The Ducks n need to win on Saturday, and they'll be in the college football playoff comfortably. Oregon's victory over USC was big for them in the aspect of having a quality win, and now they need to close out the regular season against their rival. They definitely need to get healthy at wide receiver, but there's no sense in risking injury against Washington. I feel like what they really need to do on defense is they need to contain Demond Williams. If he hurts them with his legs, then I think Washington definitely covers. But as long as as Oregon can keep him in check, as long as the Oregon defense can keep the Washington quarterback in check, I feel like Oregon's going to cover here.
Jeremy, what side of this are you coming down on? You believe
Yeah,
that Washington's offense, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I agree with my brother on this one. And Mike, you had mentioned earlier Oregon's pace of play. And I feel like they're really good at dictating the pace. And I think it's really hard for teams to keep up. And I just don't see Washington being able to keep up with Oregon's pace. And I think Oregon covers this one.
That is fair. Before we move on, I do want to let people know, write this name down if you play in NFL fantasy football. Kenyon Sadeek, the tight end for Oregon. He's going to be an absolute game changer at the next level. I see Jeremy is writing this down as we speak. He is a tight end who plays like an X receiver. Moving on, Alabama at Auburn, the Iron Bowl. Have we had more exciting SEC matchups than the Iron Bowl in the past? A lot of people talking about this one from a betting perspective. Josh, right off the bat, what's your instinct here? You default to the points on this one? Are you taking the over-under? Alabama's on the right side of the spread. What are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, I'd probably lean Alabama on the spread. It's the Iron Bowl, so it's going to draw a lot of attention, as it should. It's one of the biggest rivalry matchups in all of college football. I'll probably stay away from this one. What I liked when we were talking prior to the pod, prior to hopping on here, one of the only ways to really make a ton of money on this game, right? Is to bet Auburn, and I don't know if I'm willing to do that for this one. So I feel like I said, it Alabama minus 6.5 is probably where it should be. I think I if my arm was twisted, I would go Alabama, but I'll probably stay away from this one.
I forgot to mention the spread on this one's minus 6.5, total of 46.5. That seemed right in line. Touchdown favorite there for Alabama. Big question here. Not, I guess, not a question. It's already been settled. But despite the absolute overwhelming numbers that Deuce Knight put up at quarterback for Auburn last week, they're going back to Ashton Daniels. He did sit out last week so he could preserve his red shirt. This will be his fourth game. Jeremy, do Auburn's home splits make this a live dog situation for you, or are the injuries much more impactful? And do you think the quarterback change affects Auburn's offense?
You know, I tell you what, Mike, looking at this game, I'm tempted to take the under on this. You know, you just talked about it with Auburn's quarterback situation. You don't know really what you're going to get. Again, we talked about it with OU and Michigan. It's a rivalry game. I feel like those tend to be lower scoring. So, with this game, if I was going to do anything, I'd take the under for sure. And I just have two words for you, fellas. Roll Tide, roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Roll Tide. Don't say that in the state of Georgia, or you might not be coming back. But yeah, Roll Tide. Okay, last one, real quick. Arizona at Arizona State, minus 1.5, total of 48.5. It's an underrated rivalry. I wanted to touch on this one because that state does provide some fireworks when it comes to the offense on occasion. Josh, are you leaning towards a spread on this one? A total money line? What are you thinking?
I actually think this is a really good callback to your takes on live betting. I think you had a story time about live betting a couple of weeks back. This one is about as close to a pick 'em as you can get, and I really think that a nice way to make some money in these types of games is the live betting option, Mike. And I know you can talk way more in depth than I ever could on exactly what your leans are there, but I'll be watching this one from a live betting perspective, I think, more so than looking at the spread or looking at the over-under.
Well, the day after Thanksgiving, it's an 8 o'clock game. You should have most of the kids asleep. I think you got plenty of opportunity to analyze this one in game. Jeremy, have you picked up the in-game betting yet? Is this something, one of those games you're looking at?
You know, I haven't, but I tell you what, this game, as you said, I'm the Big 12 guy, and my Utes have defeated both these teams. So I feel like I know them pretty well. And I tell you know, ASU with Sam Levitt going down, that guy was having a monster year. He was doing great. But and ASU struggled when he went down originally with the injury. But I really feel like that their coach Dillingham, he's really been able to adapt. And I feel like they've changed their offense. They're relying a lot more on the run game. Relique Brown is a beast, guys.
Yes,
This
he is.
guy is an animal. He's a great
No
running
argument
back.
there, yeah.
And so I think they're going to lean on him a lot. You know, Jeff Sims, the backup quarterback for ASU, he's slowly been improving. He's no Sam Levitt, but again, I think Ken Dillingham has kind of adjusted their offense to rely more on the run game. And I like ASU for the straight up win here, fellas.
I love it. Taking a dog, man. That is money, or that is music to my ears. Real quick, any of these quick hitters to send out a bunch before the game? I think Mr. Wall would be apoplectic if we didn't mention Iowa at Nebraska. Iowa minus 6.5, but it's a classic Iowa total of 38.5. I
Right.
think Josh, you had one that you wanted to touch on, maybe, or Jeremy, I think you had a specific one you wanted to talk about.
Well, I just had a question for both of you. I'm really curious. Do you think Lane Kiffin is sitting at home at night looking in the mirror and practicing his Cajun accent? What do you guys think?
That's a good question. The Egg Bowl coming up, Ole Miss at Mississippi State. Really odd to hear rumors of a head coach who's been at a program for many years, not only potentially leaving it to the end of the season, but talking about it, be not even bowl season,
Well,
talking about it before the rivalry game.
the coach of a top 10 team that's a national title contender.
Yeah.
Very bizarre indeed. We also have LSU and Oklahoma. Big one for Oklahoma there. They're a double-digit favorite in that one. And then Jeremy, Utah, Kansas. Utah minus 11.5 on the road, total of 68.5. It raises questions about whether Utah's offense, which is averaging around 50 points per game over the last three, can they keep that pace on the road?
They absolutely can, Mike. Utah has scored 60 points once, 50 points three times and over 40 points three times this season. So they're going to get their points.
Excellent. I look forward to that one as well. We have a lot of football. Don't forget, folks, the day after Thanksgiving, there is a ton of college football starting at 11 a.m. with the Egg Bowl and then going all day on Saturday. We've got one more segment, folks, to pick them. I do want to get into story time very, very quickly. We'll keep this brief. We are running long, folks. We'll get back into a full version next week. But since it is rivalry week, I do want to just mention, if you're looking at betting, rivalry changes a lot. We had talked about some of the non-quantifiable factors about home teams, et cetera, in the past. But these rivalry games, I'll tell you, teams play looser, emotions often run hotter, long-standing grudges can blow right past whatever the numbers say. With so many big rivalry games on the board this weekend, every weekend of the last weekend of college football, the betting markets are going to react, and they're going to react faster to motivation, to matchups, momentum, more so than any other Saturday. That's something we'll probably touch on a little more in depth, but let's get back to the board, close it out. You guys know what it is. It's the pick'em time. Let's close it out as we always do. Josh brought it up early in the game, early in the podcast. We went 3-0 last week. We're very excited about that. We want to keep this going. One play from the Week 14 board, all we're looking at. It's a spread. It's a total. Could be if you want to put money on an underdog. Nobody's gonna tell you no. So since we got two guests, I'll let you guys fire one off and then I'll wrap it up. So Jeremy, you're the guest here. What do you got?
All right. Well, this is going to come as no surprise to anyone. My pick is Utah, Kansas. Guys, you got to hammer the over on this. The line is 59 and a half. As I said, or you said, Utah's averaging 50 points a game. Unfortunately, their defense has been a little suspect lately. They actually struggle against QBs that can run, which Kansas's quarterback can run a little bit. I see going over 59 and a half. That's a lock. That's easy money.
I absolutely love it. If you listen to this program on a regular basis, you know my mantra: life's too short to bet unders. So Utah, Kansas, over 59 and a half. Josh, what do you got for us?
Yeah, so we had talked about this game a little bit earlier. Mike, I think we might have a disagreement in this one, but that's okay. We can settle our disagreements like men. And maybe we'll have to put a side wager on this game, but I really like Oregon minus 6.5. I think I feel like they look like one of the most well-balanced teams in the country, and I really believe that they're going to put it to Washington. I really like Oregon minus 6.5. That's the lock for this week.
We are going to find out this weekend. When you said settle it like men, Josh, I thought you might have meant jousting, which not exactly my forte.
I'll joust, bro.
Good stuff all around. For my pick, I'm taking Houston plus 3 at Baylor. This one has actually gone from 2.5 to 3, so I'm excited about that. It's a key number. Houston is the steadier team, in my opinion. They're 8-3. They run it well. They play real defense. They only give up about 21 points per game. Meanwhile, Baylor's sitting at 5-6 with one of the worst run defenses in the country, allowing nearly 33 points a game. In a rivalry border type matchup where Houston's consistency meets Baylor's ultimate volatility, I'll gladly take the points. Give me Houston plus 3 for the pick'em. So there we go. Houston plus 3, Utah, Kansas over 59 and a half, and Oregon minus 6.5 for the pick'ems. Get them in now, folks. Those numbers are bound to swing, probably. I would guess that the Rundown Nation hits those and hits them hard. Gentlemen, Jeremy, it's been outstanding having you on your very first time here on the Rundown. Of course, Josh, you're an old hat now. You're old news. Now we got the new hotness in Jeremy. Anything you want to leave the people with?
Oh man, no, just thanks again for having us, Mike. I appreciate it. Yeah, really looking forward to a great week of college football, man.
Jeremy?
Yeah, thank you guys. I look forward to your podcast every week. It's must listen to podcasting, and it was a pleasure to join you guys this week. And happy
Well
Thanksgiving to everyone out
said.
there.
Happy
That's right.
Thanksgiving to everybody. Let's be thankful for a great weekend of college football. And until next week, stay sharp, sports bettors.